Anastasis, for the TV good of any picture, and any assistance, and your body pastor, child, teacher, tyranny. So, we're looking at a new chapter in the Bhagavatam. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So, chapter 4, canto 6. Prescribed duties for mankind. Chapter 4. The Hamsaguya prayers offered to the Lord by Prajapati Daksha. After Maharaj Pariksit appealed to Sukadeva Goswami to describe in further detail the creation of the living entities within this universe, Sukadeva Goswami informed him that when the Prachetas, the 10 sons of Prachini Bahi, entered the sea to execute austerities, the planet Earth was neglected because of the absence of a king. Naturally, many weeds and unnecessary trees grew, and no food grains were produced. Indeed, all the land became like a forest. When the 10 Prachetas came out of the sea and saw the entire world full of trees, they were very angry with the trees and decided to destroy them all to rectify the situation. Thus, the Prachetas created wind and fire to burn the trees to ashes. Soma, however, the king of the moon and the king of all vegetation, forbade the Prachetas to destroy the trees, since the trees are the source of fruit and flowers for all living beings. Just to satisfy the Prachetas, Soma gave them a beautiful girl born of Pramlocha Asara. By the semen of all the Prachetas, Daksha was born of that girl. So Daksha is the son of the Prachetas. Interesting. In the beginning, Daksha created all the demigods, demons, and human beings, but when he found the population not increasing properly, he took sannyas and went to Vindhya Mountain, where he underwent severe austerities and offered Lord Vishnu a particular prayer known as Hamsaguya, by which Lord Vishnu became very pleased with him. The contents of the prayer were as follows. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supersoul, Lord Hari, is the controller of both the living entities and the material nature. He is self-sufficient and self-effulgent. As the subject matter of perception is not the cause of our perceiving senses, so the living entity, although within his body, does not cause his eternal friend, the Supersoul, who is the cause of creation and of the senses. Because of the living entity's ignorance, his senses are engaged with material objects. Since the living entity is alive, he can understand the creation of this material world to some extent, but he cannot understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is beyond the conception of the body, mind, and intelligence. Nevertheless, Great sages who are always in meditation can see the personal form of the Lord within their hearts. Since an ordinary living being is materially contaminated, his words and intelligence are also material. Therefore, he cannot ascertain the Supreme Personality of Godhead by manipulating his material senses. The conception of God derived through the material senses is inaccurate because the Supreme Lord is beyond the material senses. But when one engages his senses in devotional service, the eternal Supreme Personality of Godhead is revealed on the platform of the soul. When that Supreme Godhead becomes the aim of one's life, one is said to have attained spiritual knowledge. The Supreme Brahman is the cause of all causes because he originally existed before the creation. He is the original cause of everything, both material and spiritual, and his existence is independent. However, the Lord has a potency called avijja, the illusory energy which induces the false arguer to think himself perfect and which induces the illusory energy to bewilder the conditioned soul. That Supreme Brahman, the super soul, is very affectionate to his devotees. To bestow mercy upon them, he discloses his form, name, attributes and qualities to be worshipped within this material world. Unfortunately, however, those who are materially absorbed worship various demigods. As the air passes over a lotus flower and carries the scent of the flower with it, or as the air sometimes carries dust and therefore assumes colours, the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears as the various demigods according to the desires of his various foolish worshippers. But actually, he is the Supreme Truth, Lord Vishnu. To fulfil the desires of his devotees, he appears in various incarnations, and therefore there is no need to worship the demigods. Being very satisfied by the prayers of Daksha, Lord Vishnu appeared before Daksha with eight arms. The Lord was dressed in yellow garments and had a blackish complexion. Understanding that Daksha was very eager to follow the path of enjoyment, the Lord awarded him the potency to enjoy the illusory energy. The Lord offered him the daughter of Panchajana, named Asikni, who was suitable for Maharaj Daksha to enjoy in sex. Indeed, Daksha received his name because he was very expert in sex life. After awarding this benediction, Lord Vishnu disappeared.
Okay. Sri Raja Uvacha. Devasura Nrinam Sargo. Naganam Rigapakshinam. Samasikas Tvaya Prokto Yastu Svayam Bhuventare Tasyaiva Vyasam Itchami Gyatum Te Bhagavanyata Anusargam Yaya Saktya Sasaja Bhagavan Paraha Sri Raja Vacha Devasura Ninam Sargo Naganam Riga Pakshinam Samasikastvaya Prokto Yastu Svayam Bhuvintare Tasyaiva Vyasam Itchami Gyatum Te Bhagavanyata Anusargam Yaya Sakya Sasaja Bhagavan Paraha Sri Rajavacha Devasura Nrinam Sargo Naganam Mrigapakshinam Samasikastvaya Prokto Yastu Svayam Bhuvintare Tasya Eva Vyasamitschami Gyatum Te Bhagavan Yata Anusargam Yaya Shaktya Sasarja Bhagavan Paraha Sri Raju Vacha. The king said, Deva Asura Rinam. Of the demigods, the demons, and the human beings, Sargaha, the creation, Naganam, of the Nagas, serpentine living entities, Mrigapakshinam, of the beasts and birds, Samasikaha, briefly, Twaya, by you, Poktaha, described, Yaha, which, to, however, Swayambhuve, of Swayambhuva Manu, Antare, within the period, Tasya, of this, Eva, indeed, Vyasam, the detailed account, it's Chami, I wish, Gyatum, to know, Te, from you, Bhagavan, O my Lord, Yata, as well as Anusargam, the subsequent creation, Yaya, by which Shaktya, potency, Sasarja, created Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Paraha, transcendental. The Blessed King said to Sukadeva Goswami, my dear Lord, the demigods, demons, human beings, nagas, beasts and birds were created during the reign of Swayambhuva Manu. You have spoken about this creation briefly in the third canto. Now I wish to know about it elaborately. I also wish to know about the potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead by which he brought about the secondary creation. Text number 3. Sudha Goswami said, O great sages, assembled at Naimisharanya. After the great yogi Sukadeva Goswami heard King Parikshit's inquiry, he praised it and thus replied. Text 4. Sukadeva Goswami said, when the 10 sons of Prachini Bahi emerged from the waters in which they were performing austerities, they saw that the entire surface of the world was covered by trees. Purport. When King Prachini Bahi was performing Vedic rituals in which the killing of animals was recommended, Naramuni, out of compassion, advised him to stop. Prachini Bahi understood Narada properly and then left the kingdom to perform austerities in the forest. His 10 sons, however, were performing austerities within the water, and therefore there was no king to see to the management of the world. Excuse me. When the 10 sons, the Prachetas, came out of the water, they saw that the earth was overrun with trees. When the government neglects agriculture, which is necessary for the production of food, the land becomes covered with unnecessary trees. Of course, many trees are useful because they produce fruits and flowers, but many other trees are unnecessary. They could be used as fuel and the land cleared and used for agriculture. When the government is negligent, less grain is produced. As stated in Bhagavad Gita chapter 18, text 44, Krishi go raksha vanijyam Vaishya karma is for bhava jam. The proper engagement for Vaishyas according to their nature are to farm and to protect cows. The duty of the government and the Kshatriyas is to see that the members of the third class, the Vaishyas, who are neither Brahmanas nor Kshatriyas, are thus properly engaged. Kshatriyas are meant to protect human beings, whereas Vaishyas are meant to protect useful animals, especially cows. Ama gyana timirandasya gyananjana shalakaya chakshurun litam jena tasmaye shri guruve namaha shri chaitanya mano bhishtam stapitam jena bhutale svayam rupa kada maheyam dadati svapadantikam mukam karoti vachalam pangum langayate girim yat kripa tamaham bande Shri Gurum Dinatarinam. So, social order or social structure is likened to the body. And so just as the body has a head, arms, torso, legs, so similarly also the social body has head, arms, torso and legs. And just as our body, in order to exist or function properly, requires cooperation, coordination and cooperation. Usually the coordination comes from the head, right? With a bit of heart also. Not just all head, there has to be some heart. And the arms and the trunk of the body and the legs have their functions also. So similarly, the brahmanas, kshatriyas, vaishyas and sudras correspond to the head, arms, torso and legs of the social body. And so there needs to be cooperation. There needs to be an understanding of their existence and of their relationship. Right. You know, unfortunately, we're living in a society where there's no even basic understanding of some of these principles. But this is this is a very simple concept with great consequences, really, with very, very deep consequences. The Varna Ashram principle, which divides up the social order and the ashrama, one's occupational duties and one's social duties delineated very simply in a Varna Ashram system. Varna meaning occupation and ashram meaning one's station in life. And you know, there's an understanding in a Vedic culture. Tahinos minyate yata dehe ko maram yovanam jura. You know, very, very simple concepts, actually. But who knows them in this day and age, right? Bhagavad Gita gives us very simple concepts right from the beginning. And this is common knowledge, meant to be common knowledge. Everybody's supposed to know this. Yet we're living in a culture, in a society where nobody knows it. Or if you try to point it out to them, it's like, it's too hard to understand. Right? But these are very basic, simple concepts. They're not very complicated at all. But of course have, immense consequences, ramifications for those who understand them. Because the understanding is The understanding is, you know, life has a purpose, and it's not just a material purpose, because it's not just a material creation. That it's a combination. There's the chit, the chit shakti, and the achit shakti, right? That makes up, you know, there's the conscious and the unconscious. Simply put, actually, many of these concepts actually they're not very difficult to comprehend. But as I said, ramifications enormous, right? Because they change the culture, they change the focus of action, and the purpose of action, and the focus of effort and the purpose of effort. Whereas, you know, if you're living in a society like the one that we're embedded in, then the focus is generally on material pursuits. And there's a forgetfulness, a deep forgetfulness of one's identity, one's proper understanding of self, right? The self is, what is it? Aham ameti, right? I and mine. Right? Aham, I, and mum, me. Aham ameti, I and mine. Based on a material conception of life. You know, the reason for the Varnashram system is to have a Brahminical culture. And, of course, the Brahminical culture is one where the focus is on spiritual education along with material education. Not that we do away, you know, it's a false understanding that we give up material education. We don't. But we add the active ingredient. Just like, you know, the body is just dull, dead matter without the presence of the soul, right? If there's no soul, what have you got? Nothing. It's dead. Right. So the Varnashrama system ensures that there's a Brahminical culture, ideally, if it's Daivi Varnashram, and that Brahminical culture is meant to teach, and it's the most valuable thing, right? The most valuable thing is having a proper understanding of spiritual identity. Huh? And this is the whole culture. The whole culture stems from this cultivation of a spiritual understanding called Amnaya Tattva, or what we call the Parampara. Essential learning, essential information. And these very basic things are taught. You know, what is a Vaishya supposed to do? What is a Kshatriya supposed to do? What's a Brahmana supposed to do? What's a Sudra supposed to do? These basic things are outlined. And how to identify the qualifications is mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita, right? Here Prabhupada quotes. Krishi go rakshavani jam, vaishya karmas for bhava jam. And there's also the qualities of a brahmana. Actually, the most definition is given to the brahmanas in the Bhagavad Gita, right? Samodamastapaso cham chantiyam arjam eva cha, jnanam vijnanam astikyam brahma karmas for bhava jam. The qualifications for the brahmanas. And the qualifications of the Kshatriyas. Which I can't remember. I've never actually bothered to learn. I got as far as the Brahminical qualities and thought that was enough. But anyway, you know, simple, but also sublime. So this transference or this distribution of knowledge is an essential element in this culture. And that distribution of knowledge is through the parampara. Right? Through the parampara. This is the first of the Dasamula Tattva presented by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. That the one's spiritual identity, the spiritual source of everything, which is ultimately Krishna, huh? Ishvaraha sava, what is it? Ishvaraha parama Krishna satchit ananda vigraha anadi radi govinda sava karana karanam. Krishna is the cause of all causes. The Ishvaraha parama, the supreme controller, with a satchit ananda, with a spiritual body, with a spiritual form, which is ordinarily very, 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 very far away. Right? So far away that, you know, even if you decide, Prabhupada explains, Lord Brahma explains, even if you travelled at the speed of mind, right, it would still take, you still wouldn't get there. Right? Prabhupada makes a point, you know, you could be thinking, I'm in Melbourne, but then you could be thinking, oh, what about my hometown? In wherever it happens to be. And then instantly you're taken to that place by the mind. That's the speed at which the mind travels, right? And even though that is it's very far, still you can't travel to the spiritual world. So this is the spiritual world is so far away. Krishna is so far away. Yet the parampara system is such that it brings that which is very far away and unreachable by material means, right? Because the spiritual realm and our spiritual identity is not of the material world. It can't be approached by material efforts. This is the point. It's beyond material. Yet, the parampara system teaches us how we can bring that which is very, very far away right up close so that we're able to, you know, just like if I take my glasses off now, then all of you go very fuzzy. It's hard for me to work out. You don't even have any eyes or noses, right? But yet when I put my glasses on, ooh, all of a sudden I can see you do have eyes and a nose and a mouth, right? Yet when I look through my glasses, I don't actually feel like I'm looking through anything, right? I'm looking through my glasses and it feels normal. So this system is quite amazing and so very, very important. And why we worship the Guru on his appearance day, right? Because the parampara system is designed in such a way so that what is ordinarily far, far away is attainable, is reachable, is approachable. And why we worship the spiritual master, because why the spiritual master is worshipable is because the spiritual master doesn't create anything new, right? Doesn't manufacture something or, you know, come up with something experimental or novel. But rather, it's an old system. It's time-honored system. And the spiritual master is honored on this occasion because He's presenting the same information that Krishna himself presents, that Krishna presents in the Vedanta and the Vedas ultimately. Huh? And why we worship the spiritual master as the representative of Vyasadeva. Because that information, Vyasadeva's compiled all of the Vedic literatures, which is Krishna's instructions. And the spiritual master presents Vyasadeva's teachings intact, no change, no adjustment, but simply handing down the same information, same information. So this system, this time-honoured system is very, very important. It's the essence of this culture. And why we worship the spiritual master on his birthday as the representative of Vyasadeva, and why we call it Vyasa Puja, right? In the Gaudiya tradition, you know, there's that Guru Purnima, Sanatana Goswami's appearance day, isn't it? Or is his disappearance? Can't remember. But Prabhupada says, we don't celebrate that Guru Purnima. We don't. We celebrate the worship of the Guru on his birthday. And on that day is when we worship Vyasadeva, him as the representative of Vyasadeva. Prabhupada says there's the Mayavadis who worship the Guru on the Guru Purnima, but not the Vaishnavas. Keep that in mind. Although on that day we do worship Sanatana Goswami, because he's one of our gurus, obviously. So, today is the Vyasa Puja day of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who obviously had a big impact on our lives, although not directly. Interestingly, not directly. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur impacted our lives in that he was accepted as the spiritual master of our founder Acharya, His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. And, you know, when Srila Prabhupada was, 23? And when he was a young man and he first met Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he was instructed to preach in English, in the English-speaking world. Keep in mind also that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur didn't give this instruction to only one person. This was a common instruction that he gave many people. But fortunately, at least one of his disciples took it seriously. Right? And of course, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, comes at a critical time, at a critical period of Vaishnav history, at a critical junction, because pretty much prior to he and Bhaktivinoda Thakur, there wasn't this broad acceptance of Lord Chaitanya's teachings and this notion that Krishna consciousness would be spread far and wide outside of India. Right? And so Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is a very special personality. He was the fourth son of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. then at the time, Kedaranath Dutta, right, who was the magistrate of Puri, right? And the magistrate of Puri is a powerful position. I mean, he was the head of the board of the temple, right? He's kind of like the temple president, I suppose. He's big position. Well, maybe bigger than a temple president, you know. And when Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was born, 6 months later there was a Rath Yatra. Well, sometime after there was a Rath Yatra, and the baby was born out because the Rath cart had stopped outside their house, right? And they, because of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's position, his wife was able to bring the baby out and put him at the feet of Lord Jagannath on the Rath, right? And then right at that time, the garland of Jagannath fell off onto Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, right? And so Prabhupada says this was in the beginning an indication of the importance of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And, you know, he was the ray of Vishnu prayed for by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, the empowered personality, because Bhaktivinoda Thakur had the vision. You know, he was really the seed, if you like, of the modern day Krishna consciousness movement, Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He had the vision. He predicted that, you know, that the Western devotees would come to Mayapur and would chant in the Sankirtan party, right? Chant the name of Nitya Gauranga, right? So Bhaktivinoda Thakur had the vision. Bhaktivinoda Thakur had the vision of an institution. He realized that it wasn't going to be one person who would establish a worldwide organization, or not that one person wouldn't establish it, but that it needed to be managed by an institution, not, you know, like an acharya and a mutt, that it would be much, much bigger than that. His vision was of a spiritual organization that would be made up of many people. So, and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur gave that vision some form, right, in the formation of the Chaitanya Math, and you know, he established 64 temples in India. You know, he showed what was possible within a spiritual organization. But of course, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur instructed his disciples to form a governing body after his departure, but they didn't have the vision, effectively, right? They didn't have the vision that Bhaktivinoda Thakur had, that he'd passed on to his son. And unfortunately, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur but his disciples weren't able to carry his instructions. And so after his departure, instead of forming a governing body, they appointed an acharya, which he forbade them to do. But then then there was a squabble, and the rest is history, right? And so it's very interesting when Srila Prabhupada established ISKCON, he made sure that very Well, relatively soon after he had many temples around the world, he established a governing body. Well, really, which is again following in the footsteps of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. But Prabhupada saw the mistakes that his godbrothers had made, and you know, he experienced the pain of that disobedience, effectively, right? And because they didn't, Prabhupada said, because they didn't follow the order of their spiritual master, they became asara, right? Asara means useless, meaning they didn't understand the essence of his instruction. Sara means, you know, the essence. So they were without the essence or the impetus that came from following the instructions of the spiritual master. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur demonstrated the potency of an organized spiritual institution. However, you know, it was a bit much for those. It was too much, actually, for his disciples to understand anything but an acharya as a leader of an organization. It was too. Whereas our Srila Prabhupada, understood and was able to conceptualize, and not only conceptualize, but also put into place, right, the wishes of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and, you know, and that's what we have within ISKCON. And it's proven to be a durable institution. We stick to Prabhupada's orders. Today is an important day for us. We can meditate on this parampara system, the importance of the parampara system, and the importance of following the order of the spiritual master, especially. Implicitly and explicitly, understanding the essence or the implications, and then putting that into practice. Very, very important. Yet remaining faithful to the tradition, not creating something new, but maintaining the dynamic, but not changing the dynamic, it's not such an easy thing. You know, understanding the essence, the essential, the essence. And in one sense, you know, but you could say, oh, you know, there's no mention of an institution within Shastra, so therefore it's something new, right? You could argue like that. But actually, no, it's not. The principle of organization, of institutional structure, is simply one of cooperation and working together, managing things in a way that's considerate and understanding of the needs of everyone, and working cooperatively to meet those needs, and certainly the spiritual needs of the community, and you know, following in the footsteps of the previous acharyas. And for us, what does that mean? That means Sankirtan, right? This is what we are. Sankirtan, chanting Hare Krishna, and that means book distribution. Right? This is our spiritual life. Of course, chanting Hare Krishna means also japa, sadhana, right? But basically distributing transcendental knowledge, giving mercy, samsara dava nala lida loka, right? Extinguishing the blazing fire of material existence by distributing transcendental knowledge. That's what it is. That's what the guru does. Right? And how does he do it? If you look at the Guru Vashtakam, very telling. What's the next item after giving mercy to others? What's the next item in the Guru Vashtakam? What is it? What's the next verse? Do you know the next verse, Haritam? You must. You do. You know. Mahaprabho Kirtana Nritya Gita. You heard that before? Yeah. So you know it. What does it mean? Mahaprabho Kirtana Nritya Gita. What does it mean? You sing it every day, you should know it. Yes, goes out on Sangatan, chanting and dancing. Right? And he, sometimes experiences ecstasy in the process because he's relishing the mellows of bhakti. Huh? Then what? What comes next? Sankirtan, and then what else? After that, what's the third verse? Sri Vigrahara Dharana Nityanana Sringara Tanmandira Marjanado. So all the deity worship. And this is what we do. This is what we do. Then what? After you've worshipped the deity, what do you do? What do you do after you've worshipped the deity? Chatur Vidha Sri Bhagavat Prasada. We take prasadam. We go into the we go into the kitchen and pinch the maha. Right? So this is so critical. We should never underestimate the importance of prasadam and quality prasadam. Prabhupada wrote a famous letter to all of the temples where he said you should have three cooks on standby at any time, 24 hours a day, he says. This is the standard envisaged by Prabhupada. And so that if somebody comes, you already have some sabji on the stove, you know, just keep it warm, then you turn up the heat and then fire up the wok and cook the puris. Right? Can you imagine? If you came to the temple and as soon as you came to the temple and you had darshan, you came outside, then there was fresh sabji and puris for you. How would you feel? Pretty good. You'd feel, whoa, going back to that place. Huh? Even as it was, the first time I went to the temple, I had lunch and I thought, wow, I'm going to that place again. That's pretty good. So, you know, these are very basic activities. Being merciful, giving transcendental knowledge, helping people relieve their material anxieties. And we do it with Sankirtan. We do it with the worship of the deities, and we do then, you know, prasadam distribution. This is essential, elementary for us. And that's what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur gave us by instructing Srila Prabhupada, go and preach in English to the, you know, to us. It's very touching, you know, to know that Srila Prabhupada came for us. And we're not qualified. Well, I'm not qualified. But Prabhupada came, you know, underwent great austerity to leave Vrindavan, you know, the most sacred, blessed place on the planet, you know, the perfection, he'd already attained perfection. But he left that to come for us. It's like, whoa, this is amazing. Huh? So how much do we owe Prabhupada? And also owe Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, because it was on his instruction that Prabhupada came. Right? His instruction. Go and preach. And of course, you know, this is Lord Chaitanya's mood. He was asking Haridas Thakur, how are we going to save these malechas and yavanas? Well, this is the mood of a devotee. He's not thinking about himself. And he's not thinking himself superior. He's worried, he's concerned, how can I alleviate the anxiety of Krishna? And what's Krishna's anxiety is for the welfare of all of the fallen living entities. That's his worry, his concern. He's not worried about the Brahmanas and the Vaishnavas that much because they're already liberated anyway, but he's concerned about the others, which is pretty amazing, really, when you think about it. Because, you know, most of them are no-hopers anyway. And they've all turned their back on Krishna. So he could just as easily say, okay, all right, see you later. Right? But he doesn't. He doesn't give up on anybody, which is quite, you know, that's just mind-blowing when you think about it. And so, you know, our appreciation for Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is magnified when we meditate on the, you know, the ramifications of his presentation of the parampara, right? And, you know, it appears to be something new in one sense. We could say, oh, this doesn't look like the parampara. This is something new. An institution, an organized institution, an international effort. Ooh, we've never seen anything like that before. But actually, it's not new. It's an extension of that compassion for others. It's symptomized in cooperation and coordination and collaboration of advanced devotees. Right? This is advancement, actually. That we put aside our own personal ambitions and we sacrifice our personal considerations and desires, if you like, for the benefit of the whole, of the greater cause. And so this is actually not new. This is highly advanced. This is the behavior that you see in the gopis of Vrindavan. Or you see in the associates of Lord Chaitanya who got together to preach. You know, we see it in Lord Nitya, you know, Lord Nityananda was coming to Jagannath Puri every year with the devotees to see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It was the highlight of their year, right, to go to Jagannath Puri and to participate in the Sankirtan with Lord Chaitanya and to observe the Rath Yatra, right? Who wouldn't want to go, right? Who didn't go? If they didn't go, they felt themselves unfortunate, right? But Lord Chaitanya took Lord Nityananda aside one year and said, I think you should stay back next year. Right? Out of his concern for the people who are missing out, he said to Lord Nityananda, I think you should stay in Bengal and preach. Don't come to Jagannath Puri next year. So how would Lord Nityananda and the devotees feel, right? How would you, Lord Chaitanya said, I don't think you should come next year. And they went, what? ooh, heart will be broken, right? But he put that, he put his personal, and this is a symptom of the Vaishnavas, Prabhupada, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. They put aside their personal consideration, their personal well-being or their personal convenience, and put themselves out for the benefit of others. Others who are not even qualified, in one sense. Right? They're qualified because, what is it? Patita pavana hetu tava avatar. Your purpose is to save the fallen. Right? Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Doya Koro More, isn't it? Yeah. So, you know, ISKCON appears to be something new, but actually it's not. It's fully authorized by the Parampara because it's an example of advanced devotees coming together to cooperate, to plan, to scheme, to strategize how to save the conditioned souls from their burning in the material world, basically, right? Samsara dava nalali loka. Right? And why we offer our respects to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur on this day, and to His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, because that, you know, that's the Parampara system. And why Prabhupada wanted us to, you know, honour Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, because he's the guru, pretty much giving us everything. And delivering us from this soul-killing civilization where people don't even, you know, don't know anything. Right? What do they know? S22 Ultra. Right? Or what's the iPhone? 14X. Is it? I don't know. I keep up with Samsung now. I've dropped Apple a long time ago. But, you know, this is our advancement. The latest phone is our advancement. Or the latest, you know, motor car or whatever. Television. What, you know. But no soul. And people are suffering as a consequence, really. So much anxiety, so much suicide, distress. We see it with the COVID situation. So many people in distress, they don't know what to do. But we have the answer. We know what people should be doing, right? And it's our responsibility, following the order, the instructions of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and following his example, we know what to do. And that's ISKCON. Working together cooperatively, you know, and that's the heart, that's quite advanced. Right? That's very advanced. You know, sometimes we think if everybody's not doing what I tell them to do, well, how can I be advanced? That's not what a guru does, right? A guru is the spiritual master. He tells everybody what to do. So if I'm going to be a spiritual master, then everybody should be listening to me, right? But that's not necessarily the case. If there's going to be a multiplicity, if there's going to be a sangha of devotees, and this is Prabhupada's mood. When Prabhupada was explaining, there's a very nice article in Dandabhats that I read this morning. Prabhupada was explaining that poem that he wrote about Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Adore ye all the... I can't remember the poem itself, but famous poem that Prabhupada wrote. And he said to his disciples, he said, and you will be gurus too. Right? And you'll be spiritual masters. So we should understand these instructions are also for us, and that one day we'll also be spiritual masters. Right? Think about that. Right? But that means, that doesn't mean that we'll all be telling each other what to do. No, we'll be instructing others, but we have to show the example of cooperation and coordination and organization, wherein we have a multiplicity of devotees guiding others and taking on the role of teachers, effectively. You know, what is a guru? It's a teacher. Not somebody who tells everybody what to do. This is an upside-down notion. Of course, it was like that when Srila Prabhupada was here. He was, you know, Prabhupada was although, it's interesting actually, Prabhupada did say to his disciples, I'm the Diksha Guru, you're the Siksha Gurus, to the temple presidents and to the GBC. Prabhupada said, I'm the Diksha Guru. But, you know, how much did Srila Prabhupada instruct his disciples? How much did Srila Prabhupada give his association? He gave classes and travelled and preached. But, you know, what was Prabhupada's main method of giving association and instruction? What was his main method? Anybody know? Yes, but what else? What was Prabhupada's main method of giving instruction? Books. Right? Books. Prabhupada said, I've left everything in my books. It was, and look at the effort that Prabhupada put into his books. But it was main, and it, you know, his, the GBC intimate associates, he gave them personal instructions. But he then told them, I'm the Diksha Guru, you're the Siksha Gurus, you go and instruct the others. In fact, Prabhupada famously wrote a letter to all of his disciples at one point and said, don't write me letters anymore. Right? Don't ask questions if you've got questions. Actually, one thing Prabhupada said, he said, when you read a book and you've got a question, don't ask it. Reread the book. Reread the book and your questions will be answered. So, you know, work it out. You've got intelligence, use it, right? I guess Prabhupada was sick of hearing stupid questions, which you do from time to time, right? So Prabhupada said, you know, if you've got a question, read the book again. But on other occasions he said, you've got questions, you know, don't ask me anymore. The GBC and the temple president, you know, the senior devotees in ISKCON, they're competent enough to answer these questions. You know, we think sometimes that, oh, we've got to get a guru from outside. But actually, within our community, there's dozens of devotees who know our philosophy. And they know it well. Right? It's not like, you know, we don't have spiritually advanced people in our community. We do. And if we didn't, that would mean Prabhupada's failed. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur's failed. But they haven't failed. Right? They have, you know, people might say, oh, there's no pure devotees in ISKCON. But, you know, just ignore that. And we don't hear that anyway. Right? There are actually many devotees qualified to be gurus. We'd have to be. Otherwise, it means we're not following Prabhupada. Is that right? Yeah. Why then? We need to, you know, meditate very deeply on the instructions of Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, meditate deeply on the instructions of Srila Prabhupada. Because, and Prabhupada makes this point on Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur's appearance day. He made this point to his disciples. You will be gurus one day. And it's not difficult. How do you become a guru? What's the main qualification for being a guru? Anybody like to think? You should know this. This should be, should have an answer straight away. What is it? What's the main qualification for being a guru? Krishna? What's the main qualification for being a guru? Okay. Yeah, yes. You know, well, Prabhupada says, first one is servant of Krishna, right? Jivera Svarupoi Krishna Nityadas, right? So that's, but that also comes from that, knowing the science of Krishna, right? And knowing the science of Krishna means you know that you're a servant of Krishna. And Prabhupada says it's not very difficult. You know, sometimes people make being a guru into a highfalutin thing, right? Oh, Prabhupada told me in a dream that I should be a guru. What are you talking about? Prabhupada's told all of us to be gurus, not even in dreams. He's told all of us. And who can verify a dream anyway, you know? We have that responsibility given to us by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur via Srila Prabhupada. Give Krishna consciousness in English to the English-speaking world. That's it. That's a pretty basic instruction. And if you do that, if we do that, and we are doing that, right? Hands up those who are preaching. Krishna just got his hand up. Good. Who's preaching? Who's not preaching? Raise your hands if you're not preaching. Okay, so we can assume that since nobody's raised their hands, that you're all preaching. So that means you're following in the footsteps of the previous acharyas, and that effectively you're being a guru, whether you like it or not. But what a heavy responsibility. And within ISKCON, it means to work together cooperatively. This is one of the first qualifications of being a guru is that you do what the temple president tells you to do, would you believe? Or the temple authorities, the temple structure, right? The head pujari, the kitchen manager, we work together, in other words. We have systems and we work together. And when we make a rule, we all agree, okay, the temple executive has made a rule, we all follow it. Not that, oh, I'm a guru and I can do what I like. No, that's not what a guru does at all. Especially not within ISKCON. And this is really critical. Critical to our advancement and to our ability to improve the lives of others is that we work together cooperatively within the institution. Now, that appears to be something new, but actually it's not. Right? Cooperation, coordination, organization. Is that new? It's in the spiritual world, isn't it? There are people in charge of the kitchen, usually. Radharani's in charge of the kitchen, isn't she? Or Mother Yasoda. Somebody's got to be in charge of the kitchen. Right? And if you're not behaving properly in the kitchen, what happens at home? If you're not behaving properly in the kitchen, what happens? I know what happens. Mum kicks you out. Get out of here. You're just a disturbance. Right? So if you look at it from the family point of view, if you look at ISKCON from a family point of view, we're a big family, but families need organisation. Dad's got to be in charge. Mum's got to be in charge, right? If you're misbehaving, if you're not doing your homework, then you have to be reprimanded. Sometimes people think, oh, it's not in the Shastra, you know, that we have to have an institution. But it's just common sense. And that comes from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. It comes from Bhaktivinoda Thakur. It comes from our previous acharyas. It appears to be new because, you know, this cooperation, working together, that's something, you know, that perhaps wasn't there before. Right? There was an adherence to following the acharya, right? But everybody had to do what he said rather than, working together with a multiplicity of acharyas, and that we all work cooperatively, which is a bigger challenge. That's a Majjhima platform. But of course, a Majjhima platform is also Uttam, approaching Uttama, the Uttama Bhakti. So interesting, very interesting. What Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur envisaged, his disciples weren't actually able to do together. And because they appointed an acharya, poof, they became useless. But Srila Prabhupada, and it's interesting, isn't it? Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said of our Srila Prabhupada, he said, he likes to listen. He doesn't go away. I'll initiate him. That was Prabhupada's qualification. Right? But later on he said, he'll do everything. Right? Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was prescient, even though he must have been hugely disappointed by the misbehavior of his leading sannyasis. Right? Well, how discouraging. Because he said to Prabhupada, there will be a fire in the mutt. Right? Better to tear down the marble off the walls than have my disciples squabble over who's going to have the biggest room or the most prominent position. Right? This is why this idea of prominence and in charge and whatever is dangerous, because it can be antithetical to spiritual advancement. Right? So, and Prabhupada makes a point, again in this glorification of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, that the disciple should always consider themselves a fool before their guru. Right? Even if you're, and Prabhupada says, even if you're a guru yourself, you're a teacher, you still remain a student. So that mood needs to be one of always dependency on the spiritual master and following the order of the spiritual master. But this idea, or this you know, the notion of cooperation, coordination, organization is a symptom of great advancement, actually. Even though it appears that you're subservient to the whole and so therefore, you know, not the master, but actually one becomes the master when you serve the whole. It's subtle, quite subtle. So we owe this, we owe the, in one sense, we owe the ISKCON institution to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and of course our Srila Prabhupada. Because even though Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's mission, the Gaudiya mission, was destroyed by his disciples because they didn't follow him, our Srila Prabhupada understood Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's purpose, right? And he was able to do it. And Bhaktisiddhanta, interestingly enough, recognized that and said, in the future, he will do everything, right? That's documented. He will do everything. Amazing, you know, when you think about it. And even Prabhupada, when he was in America, he was still trying to encourage his godbrothers to cooperate. And they were still telling him, no, you've got to do what we tell you to do. And yet he was the one who did everything in the end. Some of them recognized it, but others couldn't. They thought that our Prabhupada was actually destroying Vaishnava culture. And they criticized him for it. So, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Srila Prabhupada, Ki, Jai. Srila Prabhupada, Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada, Ki, Jai. It's also Gaur Govinda Maharaj's disappearance day today. And Gaur Govinda Maharaj, very quickly, was a very interesting devotee because he was a Vaishnava all of his life. He grew up in Vaishnava culture in Orissa. Right? Very interesting. Grew up singing the songs of Narottam Das Thakur, Bhaktivinod Thakur, you know, steeped in traditional Gaudiya Oriya culture. And he was a teacher. As a young man, he was a teacher. But had obviously, you know, leanings, inclinations towards devotional service. And so he had a desire to preach, to teach and preach, and wanted to be a sannyasi, and had left home, had wound up his household affairs, and went to Vrindavan. It must have been 40, or, you know, later years, maybe even over 50. And in Vrindavan, met Srila Prabhupada. Right? And then realized that he was his guru. He wasn't initiated. He'd taken the name Gaura Gopal, but he wasn't initiated formally, as I understand, as it's narrated by some. And took initiation from Srila Prabhupada, was given first and second. Then 6 months later was given sannyas. And then Prabhupada told him, gave him the instruction, you know, you're an educated gentleman. I want you to translate my books into Oriya. Right? So Gaura Govinda Maharaj went to Bhubaneswara. We were given some land in Bhubaneswara. And it was there that he camped and he was translating Prabhupada's books, living in these, like a tent almost. I remember going to Bhubaneswara and the devotee said, oh, here's the ISKCON temple in Bhubaneswara, and it was just some concrete coming out of the ground in the middle of a field, right? And I remember standing there thinking, what the hell are we doing here? Why? It just didn't make sense at all. Of course, now where the ISKCON temple is in Bhubaneswara, it's kind of like the center of the city, which was completely inconceivable in those days. And we travelled, we'd taken, I don't know, 24 hours by bus to get to that point, maybe longer actually. How far is Bhubaneswara from Puri? About an hour, right? Yeah, so we must have driven 30 hours by bus from Mayapur. Why we did it, it was a crazy trip. But anyway, we ended up in Bhubaneswara. Gaura Govinda Maharaj was there and I was just scratching my head thinking, what is this? Why? Doesn't make sense. Because, you know, Prabhupada said, you know, we should have temples in the busiest part of town. And here was the Bhubaneswara temple, definitely not in the busiest part of town. It was out in the middle of a field. But of course, Prabhupada had a vision. You know, it is now one of the most prominent locations in Bhubaneswara. Things change, right? So anyway, Gaura Govinda Maharaj travelled and preached extensively. He knew Prabhupada's books inside out. He was a really good preacher, strong preacher, and inspiring preacher. And visited Melbourne on more than one occasion. There were a few conflicts with his disciples, say the least, at the time. Interesting history. But Gaura Govinda Maharaj remained always, he was an inspiring preacher. And it was in Mayapur. I was there, I was in the room next door. I was staying in the room next door. No, not the room next door. No, yes, it was. It was the room next door. He was staying in what we now call the Sydney room, and I was in the Melbourne room. And I remember it was the GBC meetings, and I remember hearing this chanting, you know, devotees chanting with a kind of an urgency. And I thought, well, that doesn't sound right. And it was coming from the room next door, and I went out and I looked around, and Maharaj had been preaching to some devotees. And they'd ask him, you know, they were asking about the essence of the Rath Yatra. What was the meaning of Rath Yatra? And Maharaj had been explaining this and talking about the mood of Srimati Radharani, and then he'd started to feel discombobulated. He was feeling unsettled. So he lay down. And it was then he left his body, and the devotees were chanting. And I remember standing at the window. We were all chanting Hare Krishna. It was quite sublime. But then that night really went crazy. For some reason, some gundas attacked. The alarm system went off. In Mayapur, they have this siren on top of Jayaprataka Maharaj's rooms. And they usually set that off if there's an emergency. Right? So, oh boy, it was a wild night, I tell you. But anyway, Gaur Govinda Maharaj's departure was pretty auspicious. It was on Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's appearance day, and he was preaching in Mayapur. And of course, you know, it's a tragedy that we lose the association of the devotee, but Prabhupada says it's beautiful. Right? Just as the appearance day is beautiful, so is the disappearance. Right? Just like dawn is beautiful and sunset is beautiful. Right? So the appearance and disappearance of a devotee is transcendental and appreciated, relished, if you like. So, auspicious day today. Any comments or questions? Boys, everything okay? Okay, rightio. So, Kshatriyas are meant to protect human beings. Vaishyas are meant to protect useful animals, especially cows. So next verse is text 5. Kvantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur Prabhupada ki jai, Govinda Swami ki jai, Gaura Bhaktabrinda ki jai.